It's time to welcome for the first time in 2017, Senior Consultant at Holborn Assets, Karen Bobka. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning, Sally. Nice to see you.
Great to see you too. Looking fabulous and in the new year. Happy New Year to you.
And to you and to everyone listening.
How's it been so far?
Brief. Not too bad.
Yeah.
Do you know that the first week of the year never really feels like the year starts? You know, that whole thing of diets and giving up and everything. I think we all give ourselves a bit of a bye on the first week, and now we're hitting the serious January.
You've
now
just gotten over New Year's and you're just like, hold on a minute, I need a week to recover.
Yeah, you need to be kind to yourself a little bit before you go into that. I'm living on salad and mineral water, don't you?
You do, exactly. Like we said, we're in the second week now of January, and a lot of us are opening up those credit card statements and probably overindulged over the holiday period. But thinking, you know, hopefully this year is going to be it. It's going to be different in terms of finances, in terms of money. I'm going to save more. I'm going to invest more. You know, we love that term, wealth creation. Is it possible? Is it completely elusive?
It's interesting. I mean, I've written a lot in the last few months about budgeting and spending smart, etc. There are some theories out there that it's all very well saying, I am going to save, but you have to be a lot more specific about it.
Mm.
It's just too nebulous, I'm going to save. You need to actually pin it down and say, right, I am going to be saving 100 dirhams a week or whatever it is, and put that money aside so you can actually see it. Whatever the number happens to be, once you, I hope, have done your budget and worked out what your spending limits are and rationalized it a little bit and worked out what you've got to pay to get those debts paid down, to then actually give yourself a number or something that you're going to aim towards. I need to have saved X amount by, and then you can work it back in incremental stages.
So it's all about goals.
It is about goals. And I think it's easier to achieve them if there's something, if you know what you're aiming at.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So this is the way to start. If you don't know where to start, it is all about setting those goals. And I mean, it depends as well on your personal situation, where you're starting from, I guess. And we will get into that in just a moment in terms of, you know, how to get on with 2017 and make it a good financial year. But let's take a look back at 2016 and what's going to be impacting us going ahead.
Well, I think we can safely describe 2016 as interesting on many levels. I mean,
yeah.
It felt like quite a dramatic year, I think, for many of us. Not necessarily here in the UAE, but looking across the world, from both in terms of what felt like an awful lot of quite beloved celebrities being lost, and then political issues. And obviously the two main ones that are making the headlines is Brexit in the UK and then the election of Trump in the US. Now, I just want to talk about what's happened, but more in terms of how it affects us as individuals. I know that, you know, there's a lot of programs around here that talk about the heavy business side, and you don't want to listen to me doing that kind of thing. Last year, we started with concerns over the slowing Chinese economy, and that hit oil prices. And clearly, the knock-on effect here is then redundancies and issues in a lot of business. And although Dubai is not dependent on oil, it's tourism more. Abu Dhabi is far more so, you know, tied up with the oil industry. And these things have a ripple effect. So we saw quite a lot of redundancies. And I don't know about you, but I certainly had quite a few friends that left last year. I think we all suffered a bit of that as well.
I think we did see, you know, people coming and going quite a bit.
One of the worst things about living out here is that your friends tend to go, don't they? So that there's issues there, and there are still people are concerned, I think, in certain sectors as well. Although we have seen prices come back up. At one point, they dropped to $30 a barrel, which was a scary low number. But at the end of the year, they finished on around $55. So that's $50 a barrel is the sort of the number that makes people a bit more comfortable.
Yeah,
I think so. We'll see what happens on that, and if that can be held up, because that does help our region. Because obviously we've got, you know, issues with Saudi that knocks on here as well.
Richard Dean was counting on 70. That did not happen.
No. I think Richard was a tad optimistic.
Do you think that's going to happen this year?
I'm not sure, because there's other oil coming online from other places now, isn't there? So we'll have to watch. I don't like to predict an awful lot, because it does tend to come back and bite you, doesn't it?
It
if
does.
You're not careful. You know, in June, the big shock in Europe was the UK voting to leave the EU. And that sounds like a very UK-centric issue, but it isn't, because we're now going to see similar issues going to hit a lot of Europe in 2017. There's a lot of major elections coming up, France, Italy, and I suspect that in 6 months' time, looking, if you go back from where we were a year ago, the only person still in the same position is going to be Angela Merkel.
Exactly.
So
yeah,
a lot of changes there, and I think other votes to leave the EU.
Then again, many questions about whether she can really get there and take a fourth term. So we will see. It will be one to wait and
we
watch.
We will indeed. But I think the changes there, and you know, this is a, it sounds trite to say it's a global world, but countries don't largely, apart from a few exemptions, sit in isolation. Mm. So something that happens in the US, something that happens in Europe, has repercussions elsewhere, because companies trade globally. If you're buying into a stock or a fund that says it's, for example, a Europe stock, well, chances are those companies are actually trading across the world. So what happens elsewhere is going to have an effect. So we do need to be aware. We don't all have to be, you know, political mavens to know about everything that's going on, but to have some awareness on why it's hitting you in your pocket and you and your investments is what's important here.
And nothing ever happens in isolation anymore, does it? And
it, of course, does not.
In November, we had the election of now President-elect Trump. He's about to be, how many days now? We are on the 9th, 11 days now.
Yes.
Until his inauguration as the President of the United States. That happened, but I mean, the stocks, well, the money markets kind of went down, but then went up again, actually, interestingly, you know.
I think the expectation there was that he, with his, the comments that he did make, what he was going to do prior to election, said that there was going to be investment in infrastructure, and that was liked by the markets. However, the obverse of that is, where is the money going to come from? Does that mean the US national debt is going to increase? And that's a concern as well. That, I think, is very much a watch and see, because a lot of it, we're talking unknown quantities. So we'll have to wait and see. Mm. And then with all of this in mind, and I mean, obviously we've had increases in various indices. Gold prices have been up and down, a bit of a bell curve with gold prices, you know, lower at the beginning of the year, a big rise in the middle, and kind of back down again a bit. So we're seeing volatility there. And then, you know, what I want to go and talk about a little bit is what should we be doing?
Mm, exactly. I mean, this is the thing. When you're looking at what's happened in 2016 and even looking ahead, there's a lot of uncertainty about. And we know that money markets don't like that too much. Karen Bobka, senior consultant at Holborn Assets. And we were just talking about taking a look back at 2016 and what's been happening, and looking at and seeing a lot of uncertainty, basically. And if you're somebody who's looking ahead and looking at your investments, that might not be such great news. But Karen, how do we make sure that we avoid that risk, if it's possible to do that at all?
It is, when you're investing, it's impossible to avoid all risk. Otherwise, I mean, even keeping your money in a bank account has a risk, because it has inflationary risk. So you have to take a certain amount, but you can take an amount that you're comfortable with. So if you want to be relatively cautious, you can do that in terms of your investments. If you're someone who's quite speculative and you're taking a long-term view, you can do that. But as time goes on, we do need to review how people invest, taking into account a certain extent how markets are. Now, I don't like to manage portfolios on a very reactionary basis, because I think it should be a big picture thing. If someone is, you know, somewhere in the middle, say like the average person, they can take a certain amount of risk, and you have to take a long-term view. Things will go up and down, but you can, to a certain extent, limit issues. Now, if you think we're going to be heading into a volatile period because of the political and financial risks that we're seeing at the moment, it's possible to rebalance your portfolio and to move away slightly from things like emerging markets, where the areas that we tend to see more volatility in, and just kind of pull in the horns a little bit and be a bit more sensible. If that means that you are going to be more comfortable and you will sleep better, then that's the approach that you need to take. But it just shows how important it is to have investments reviewed at least once a year, taking into account your views, your situation that may have changed, and where markets stand.
Okay. We also need to talk about higher interest rates and inflation right now, because these are all changing as well. We are seeing higher interest rates in places.
We are, and we will be seeing increases. Now, the immediate effect there is obviously an increase in savings rates, which is good for those people that have got cash in the bank, but obviously an increase in interest rates, so that's an increase in outgoings in many cases, and that can often lead to inflationary pressures, so an increase in the cost of living. Obviously here we've got current currency risks as well. I mean, we're linked to the US dollar here. People are moving money around, so most people are pretty aware of what's happened with exchange rates, certainly with sterling being worth rather less than it was a year ago.
But you're still probably, if you've got a mortgage, you're going to be seeing that going up here.
Yes, it is expected. And this is why you have to keep an eye on that budget and always build in a margin of error, if you like. So you've got a buffer if the cost of living goes up. And invariably, the cost of living goes up year on year on year. And that's just the world that we live in.
That's just how it goes, isn't it?
Right, so.
Okay. 2017, what advice have you got for us in terms of, just making it a better year for everybody?
Do the boring thing of sorting out your budget, sorting out your spending, getting your finances in order, then set them to one side, and then you can enjoy the good things. There is nothing worse than having, well, there are worse things, but it's a pretty bad thing, to have that sort of the monetary concerns hanging over your head. It's extraordinarily stressful.
Yes.
And I see a number of people for money counselling where they have issues, they've built up debts, and they are stressed to the max. And what they need to do is to face up to the issue and then start working on strategies and solutions. I guarantee that someone will feel better once they've faced and they know what they're actually doing and they've got steps in hand.
Can I ask you, before we launch into your fabulous article, the financial personality types, right? This is what we're going to be going through in just a moment. But when you are deciding, okay, I need to go and see a financial advisor, what kind of questions should you be asking them before you commit to being with that person?
Right. There's a whole bunch of things that you need to be aware of. Reputation of the individual, reputation of the company, their qualifications, their experience, how they work. Are they a salesperson? Are they an actual advisor? Ask them questions. Ask about testimonials from previous clients. Sit down with that person and chat with them, because you need to be with someone who you get on with, someone that you absolutely trust. And it does amaze me when people come to me and they say they've been dealing with such and such for a period of time, but they're not really happy because they never really trusted them.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
You would imagine that would be the first thing.
You'd think, wouldn't you? So you want someone who's going to be there for the long term. I would hope that you would get an option of fees or commission. And later on this year, we'll go into the whole regulatory landscape, which is going to be changing in this country. And it's going to be a lot more transparency in a couple of years' time. But you want someone who's going to be there for the long term and who will work with you, rather than just take a whole lot of commission on an investment and then never talk to you again. It's about planning, not selling.
It is indeed about planning and not selling, and we're just about to launch into these personality types. But this comment coming in from Manny earlier: I've got two kids studying medicine in the UK. The cost for both of them is around 440,000 dirhams annually. Thank God for Brexit, resulting in the drop in the exchange rate.
Well, that's worked for him then, hasn't it? He's sending money from here to there.
That's extraordinary. Good luck to you, Manny. But this is, it's one of those things. People talking about, asking about whether gold prices are going to increase after Trump's inauguration. I don't know that we have a crystal ball.
Orange and Trump's and gold, is that the connection? I'm not entirely sure. Gold prices go up and down. It is a commodity. It has volatility. It will always go up and down. In this part of the world, people are obsessed with gold. But so if you look at last year's figures, down, up, down, the same thing will happen. If you can get in or out at the right times of the cycle, or you can sit and hold it for a long time, then maybe it might do well. But it's not necessarily the safe haven that it was once seen to be.
Okay, that's from Alan. Thanks for sending that in. Alan, if you've got more questions for Karen, then you can send them in right now, 4001. Or for free on the Dubai Eye app, you can save yourself some money as well. I'd love the app. You can listen to us on it. You can send us messages on it. Whatever you like, enter your competitions. It's all there. You can do it on the app. It's on Google Play Store or on the App Store for iTunes. We're going to look at personality types now and just quickly go with the first one just before we go to the news. Yeah. So tell us. There are seven of these.
Well, I've come up with seven. If you go a Googling, you'll find all sorts of different personalities, up to 20. That seems a little much, frankly. There's a lot of different types. And as an industry, we tend to bracket people. So you're the, you know, the soon to be retired, you're the young married, you're the young family, etc., or you're a cautious investor. But I think there's more to it. There's styles, and that's what I want to talk about today, is your personal style. Because if you get a handle on that, you should have a better idea of what will then work for you. And at the end of this, I am going to ask you which category
this
you put yourself
into. This is
going
to be interesting. I never really thought about it.
There's not really a right or wrong. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not going to be sort of too judgy about this.
I hope not.
But there are different styles. And you know, people say, oh, I'm a spendthrift or I'm a saver. But there's more to it. There's styles of spending and there's styles of saving.
Yeah, that should get you in to the mood. Does that get you into the mood?
Makes me laugh every time I hear it.
It's your theme music, Karen.
It is now, yeah.
Exactly. Karen Bobka is here in studio with us. We are talking all things money this morning and personality types. I had no idea, to be completely honest, before you wrote this article and sent it to me, that there were savings and financial personality types and whatever. And let's go through it. Number one.
Right. The first one on my list, and this is in no particular order. If you're at the top of the list, you're not better or worse. Let's make that so we're very egalitarian here. Type one, the investor. The person who wants to spend money on things that they see as having value. Mm. So they will spend money on technology, but they do like to buy nice things. So
the best.
Yes.
Yes.
Something that's worthwhile. Won't go for the cheap option. We'll go for the higher end version of something because they see it as giving better value and lasting longer, you know, higher spec on technology. We'll spend money on holidays because the experience is seen to be giving value. So these people are not cost cutters, but they see themselves as smart how they spend and getting value for money. So often if they're buying, you know, basic things for the house, they're not going to be too worried about getting the high end there. They want something that does the job. They're not concerned about the fashion, but it's quality.
Okay.
It's quality is what we're after here.
We like this. Okay. They have a good idea of what they want and what matters, where they are heading, and often immune to fashion and pressure, you say. So, yeah.
Yes. So hopefully with that in mind, they won't be swayed by what is the latest thing.
They're not trendy.
Not worried about trends. Stylish, maybe, not trendy.
It's about you know, having something that's going to last, that is good quality, that is probably a classic piece. If you're talking about fashion,
yes,
they're more likely to buy, you know, those classic pieces that they can wear for years, in fact, or have for years to come.
I think that's a really good point. And often that is the case, isn't it? You can, when it comes to clothing, you tend to have the high fashion stuff that's relatively disposable because it's not designed to last forever, but it's cheap and cheerful. Or you can go the other way and you can spend what seems like a lot of money on something, but when you factor it out wear for wear, the more expensive can often be better value for money. And it depends what it is, but that's what these kind of people the investors are seeking, what they perceive to be value for money over time.
Okay, number two is the bargain hunter, the person who spends hours poring over websites and catalogues before making a major money decision. I've got to say, I feel like I fit into that category.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah, not me. I have to say, I get bored really quickly and I want someone to tell me what's the best one to go and buy. And like, not good thing. My husband is the one that tends to go through and pore over this stuff. It keeps him happy, so we'll hive that cheer off in my house.
I feel like I need to have... See, this is the thing. The more money that something costs, the more time I will generally spend thinking about it and researching it. And because I don't want to have buyer's remorse. So then I want to, you know, convince myself that it is worth forking over all of that money for that purchase.
Well, I think that makes sense when you're spending large amounts of money. You work hard for money, so you don't want just to be throwing it away on something that's not going to give you value. It's a smart way to spend. You know, you don't want just to go out and just be frittering thousands of dirhams on something that may not be good. But you can end up going too far. You end up with inertia. And that's where I get to if I'm looking at these things. I see so many different options. I get completely bamboozled. And then we'll just like, I'll come back to it tomorrow and then won't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the problem is sometimes as well, you've got to know when is it too long, spending too long doing these things, because otherwise you do miss out on an opportunity sometimes and things pass you by.
Yeah, you can, as you say, you can miss out. And I think sometimes the bargain hunter just needs a little bit of focus and decisiveness to make a decision, you know, of what they're actually going to be spending the money on and how they're going to do things. Cheap isn't everything.
No.
So, and that's often...
But a good price is a good thing.
A good price is a good thing, but I do come across people in the work that I do that who are, I would say, overly concerned about the price of investments, and they spend so long not being able to decide or trying to compare things that aren't really comparable that they're missing out on times of investment and what they could actually be doing.
And it's like, not to nitpick, obviously, over a few dirhams here and a few dirhams there when you're making such a large purchase, and it kind of does get a bit ridiculous.
You can go too far.
Yeah.
But it's smart to shop around. And here, you know, we have the online sites and the ways of doing that, which we didn't have, you know, 5, 10 years ago.
Sites that compare things for you.
Yes. Narrows it down. Makes life easier, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, even James Mullen from Which School Advisor was in here the other day. There's a new website that compares schools. He's set up a website that compares school fees.
Oh, fantastic. That's an interesting one. Yes.
It's fantastic. So it's just amazing. You can put in the criteria that you want that you want to compare the schools based on, and it will compare the schools for you, compare the school fees, and it's just fantastic. This is what we need more of.
Exactly.
That we're really used to that in places like Australia and the UK.
Yeah.
They're just everywhere. But, you know, it's great to see that these things are picking up here now.
We're getting that. It certainly narrows down the options, doesn't it? So you've only got to sort of choose between 2 or 3 rather than 30. And that's where you get that sort of buyer's inertia.
And number 3 is the planner.
Yes, the really organised ones. Now, these, you know, in my world, these are the clients that come in with their own laptop and show me their spreadsheets. And there are people like that. Often they're engineers. Hello, engineer clients. You're the ones that do that. And they're super organised. You know, possibly we've got the grandmother that only ever went shopping with a list and would not deviate and had a food plan for the week. These are the planners in life. And they're super structured and super organised. Now, sometimes they maybe need to step out from that a little bit. But it's no bad thing to be in control of what you're doing, as long as you give yourself a little bit of wriggle room, I think, as well.
I think as a mum, you have to be a planner. I find it, because I'm working and because I'm a mum as well, I have to plan what I'm going to cook during the week, and I have to hopefully do my shop, you know, at the early in the week and make sure that it fits for everybody, you know, throughout the week. So yes, I've got to be a planner too.
It works. I mean, it works in terms of your time, not just money, but it's a time thing, isn't it? So having a bit of structure. And there are lots of budgeting apps out there, and I really must do some proper research, because I don't use budgeting apps personally. I'm a bit old school, and it's scrap of paper, back of an envelope kind of thing for me.
I think they're very handy. They're very handy, the budgeting apps, because I'm hopeless at looking at a blank spreadsheet.
Do you use one?
I was using one, yeah.
Right, because the thing is, I tend to find that people go, I've got this great app, and they've downloaded it, and then they don't actually use it, because they just feel like they've done the job by having the app.
No,
so you've got to actually force yourself to go through the process of using it at the same time.
Yeah, very true.
It doesn't really matter what method you use on budgeting, as long as you've got a handle of where you are on your finances.
Number 4 is the minimalist.
Yeah, now let's be honest.
Don't see a lot of these in the UAE.
No, I don't think we really do. But these types do exist elsewhere, and probably back in our home countries. Someone who wants a simple life, who possibly has a small house in the country with a small holding, they're growing vegetables, they've got some chickens and goats. Often they'll retire early because they've saved a lot of money by not buying... what should we call them? The fripperies of modern life. The things that the investor would think was essential, the minimalist doesn't actually want to have. So it's a very much a pared down lifestyle. But I don't think that would even work here, to be honest.
I don't know. I mean, nobody has that kind of mentality of being a minimalist here. You don't see that. It's kind of about getting the bigger house, the, you know, the better car and more stuff. And with kids, gosh, it's difficult to control, quite frankly.
Yes, it's
spending.
Hard to cut your spending down with all the fees there. Now, admittedly, we know that, you know, that there's different levels of income, and there are those who perhaps have a more minimalist life, not by choice, but because that's just where their income is. But there's certainly a huge pressure on us living here to spend money and to have this. And you only have to look at the advertising. It's all for cars and a big villa and shiny this and shiny that. And it's quite hard sometimes to go, well, no, I'm not playing that game.
Or I don't actually need it, to kind of step back and go and to just really ask yourself, do I actually need this? Can I do with less?
Will it make you any happier if your TV is, you know, 10 centimetres bigger than the one that you've got currently? I'm doubting it, really. You can go too far on that kind of thing.
Is it something else? Is it a sign of something else? If we're thinking, oh, you know, if we are indulging in, say, too much retail therapy, could that be a sign of something else?
General insecurities in life, quite possibly, and unhappiness. And I think there's many psychological studies that have shown such things, and that will often lead to it, because then you end up with a huge amount of debt, and that will make you unhappy.
Do you see clients sometimes coming in, you know, one spouse kind of tends to spend, maybe, you know, I don't want to say out of control, but kind of maybe goes over the top a little bit in terms of spending, and the other spouse is kind of saying, well, why can't we just rein this in?
I do, to a certain extent. I think it's rare that I see a couple where their styles are polar opposites, because those people would largely not get together. But there is often one who's a spender or saver, not necessarily on the same things, though. You'll find that one may be the one that wants to budget on everything and have the spreadsheets, the planner, whereas someone else is, oh no, we need to buy this because it's a nice thing to have. And it's a sort of complementing and contrasting thing to a certain extent.
Yes. Those who spend together, do they stay together?
Ooh, it depends how much debt they've got and how much they argue about it, really, doesn't it?
We'll talk more about debt and personality types and all the rest of it in a minute. We've got one here from Nadir who says, of course, having more with better quality products will make us more happy, and that goes without saying. What do you think about that?
Well, it might make him happier, but not everybody.
Not everybody.
It doesn't work. It's not that black and white. We're all different. What makes us happy is different for all of us.
A great message has come in on the other side from Metti. I think that's how I pronounce that. Sorry if I didn't pronounce it properly, but saying minimalists. We're definitely out there just doing it Dubai style. Quite a few groups in Alain homeschooling and keeping costs down that way. And personally, I've been in the same home for 13 years and driving an old car. I take pride in that and probably have bigger savings than many of my children's classmates' parents, and saying thanks for the show.
Good for you, yeah. I say. Good for you. So it can be done. We just don't hear about them then, do we?
Exactly. Yes. Very quietly kind of just doing their thing. But that's really wonderful to see and inspiring for others that it can be done.
Exactly. You don't have to buy into all the shiny, shiny stuff that we
exactly.
do.
Exactly. It is not that difficult. We can do it just like Met or Metti. So definitely get your texts in. This is an interesting one as well, saying, I'm shocked at how little we're being offered for our 10-year-old car, 10% purchase price of the purchase price. We are second-hand. Why are second-hand prices so low? They're thinking to scrap it. What do you think?
I think it's a buyer's market. There's been a lot of people leaving, selling on cars. There's pressure to have newer cars. Because of how harsh our environment is, people are reluctant to have older vehicles as well. I think those are all the reasons for that.
Yeah. We've got Yasmin on the line as well. Good morning, Yasmin.
Good morning, Sally. How are you?
Great to have you on, Yasmin. Tell me about your minimalist lifestyle. You are somebody who is doing that here in Dubai as well.
I'm trying to. I could say that I really have a long way to go, but it's a goal of mine. And, of course, having a family and young children, it's very challenging. And I think it's also very tempting when you go out in Dubai and you see somebody with a new outfit or new trendy accessories. This can pose, you know, an everyday challenge not to buy more things, not to change up your wardrobe. But as you mentioned before, you just have to be more thoughtful in on how to buy into this minimalist lifestyle. We chose recently to move to Sustainable City, and not a lot of people know about Sustainable City. It basically is the concept of moving into a compound that is run on recycling everything, the water, the use of electricity is powered by solar panels, and this is something very new to Dubai as far as residential living. So this was one of many steps that we've tried to take to reduce our footprint of damaging our environment, but also changing our lifestyle and how much we consume.
That's really great to hear, Yasmin. When you talk about being a minimalist, you know, you've moved to a sustainable city. What other things are you doing in your life that's kind of, you know, bringing your costs down and helping you to live a simpler life?
That's a very good question. I mean, again, it's a struggle. I mean, having conversations with my husband, you figure that it's usually the roles are reversed because it's usually men that are more minimal and women who are not. That's kind of the stereotype. So, you know, my husband gets a great kick out of getting new socks or buying different types of toothpaste. And we have arguments about this, so it's a constant struggle. But he does understand that, you know, where we want to get in our lives and how we want to be as individuals towards the rest of the world is going to take more thoughtfulness, which means like not buying, you know, a new, clothes all the time, but trying to see what we have in our wardrobe that we really like and holding on to that. And that when we make future purchases, they're not on a whim. And these purchases are more thoughtful and being more effective on the items that we actually buy. In order to do that, you know, it takes thought. And again, resisting the temptation to buy other things, more up to date things. These are all different types of challenges. So, you know, that's what we're dealing with at the moment.
It's great to hear from you, Yasmin. Thank you so much for calling in and have a fantastic day.
You too.
There's a great call from Yasmin, somebody who is really trying. It's not easy, you know. It's something that people struggle with. You do want to save on the one hand, and, you know, it's not just about the money as well, but like she said, you know, it's about reducing your carbon footprint, and there are a lot of factors involved here.
Sure, and that's really good to hear. I mean, I think as a country, we're starting slowly to take those steps, having had not a terribly good track record in the past, but it's moving, and it's certainly changing, isn't it?
And more and more people being aware of it.
I'm delighted.
Yeah.
About that. That's good news.
I love this. Thanks, Sayed, saying having more things doesn't make you happy, but I would like to be sad in a Mercedes rather than on a bike.
Understood. Totally.
Yes, definitely. Let's just go through the last few. We've got the giver. We haven't gone through this one in terms of personality types and financial personality types. What's the giver like?
Well, the giver is the altruist, the person who likes to help others and prefers to give rather than to receive to a certain extent. Now, that dovetails quite nicely with talking in sustainable city, because this is the person generally who will be more interested in ethical or environmental investments.
Yep.
They are out there. That's something I'm going to be talking about later in the year as well. And often this person will give more to charity than the average person.
And including spending more on education for their kids.
Yes, because that's seen as giving to children. It's just a slightly different mindset in some ways on that particular one.
So they are spenders, but they're not focused on image and clothes and
not
the
at
cars.
All. Yeah. Not at all. That's mine. And those are things that you have to have. So you do what you have to on that particular
spending
one.
Spending on what's important. Okay, the procrastinator. This is interesting.
I meet a lot of procrastinators. Well, they've taken the first step when they've come to see me, but the procrastinator is quite clearly the person who is full of good intentions but never actually gets around to sorting things out. And the first step they need to take is to come and see me, and then I will hold their hand and guide them, and not force them, but to persuade them to do the things that they need to do, because they know that they need to. And it's really easy to put things off. And I was going to sort of call this something else, like the ostrich, the person that's got their head stuck in the proverbial sand in the belief that it'll all come right. You've got The procrastinator is a tough one to get to make someone to make a decision, because the thing is, if they don't do something now or soon, they could put themselves or their family in an awkward position down the line.
What is holding them back often, the procrastinators? Are they afraid of something? What is it?
A whole combination of things. They just don't want to talk about it. They have concerns of what they should or shouldn't be doing. They're the sort of person that often finds it very hard to make a decision. Some of us are very decisive in life. Others of us aren't.
Is it for a lack of knowledge about financial matters and things, and just being scared of the whole idea of tackling it, maybe?
I think to a certain extent, and perhaps also a fear that they're going to be sold something that they don't want, as opposed to being advised to do the things that they need.
Right.
And that comes back to your earlier question about who you should deal with and what you should be looking for in an advisor. Is someone who's going to work with you, as opposed to just go, all right, I've met you, I'm not asking questions, I just want to sell you something. That's the difference there.
The last one, let's go on to the last one, which is really all of, some of them and all of them.
I think many of us don't fit wholly into one category. Mm. We're a bargain hunter in some respects, but then we're also a giver for something else. So many of us are a bit of a hybrid. We're not all everything, but we have different aspects because we're slightly complex as human beings, aren't we?
I'm trying to think which one I am now. Probably the bargain hunter, a bit of the giver, and a bit of the investor, I think.
Mm.
Bit of those three, yeah.
That's right. Well, that means you've identified your main traits.
What about you?
I think I am partly an investor, partly a giver.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That makes sense. Nice. Okay. We've got to wrap it up. So we need to tell everybody where they can get in touch with you and to read more of your columns and your articles.
The best place to go and have a look at is my website, which is financialuae.com. Mm-hmm. And on there is information for contacting me, a load of other articles, things on budgeting and saving. So lots and lots of useful information. So that's financialuae.com.
A couple more text messages to quickly read out before the news. Happiness depends on whether you have peace with yourself and whether you like yourself. And then comes what you own and what you have in your life. Being healthy is a precondition for happiness, but it's not enough, says Nadir. That's a great message, Nadir. And this is interesting. Sustainable City has zero service charges, free solar power, electric cars. When will we see more electric cars here? There are hundreds of charging stations, but we need to see more of those. And that will be something that will hopefully save people money as well.
Well, I think give it time. We'll get there. We'll get there.
Dubai is getting there. Karen Bobka, it has been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you again.
Thank you. And we shall see you next month. Brilliant.